Welcome to Pixel Parenting, where we talk about science-based tools, challenges, and opportunities of raising children in today's tech-driven society. I'm your host, Patricia Cangas, a digital marketer, former video game professional, and holder of a master's degree in educational studies by Johns Hopkins University. Welcome to the first episode of Pixel Parenting. This is quite an unusual podcast, as I will be experimenting with AI tools. So, in this first episode, I embark in a conversation with an AI agent that I have trained with extensive research on digital parenting and parenting strategies. I have made sure that its answers are truthful, engaging, and hopefully useful for parents. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Please leave comments and questions, if you have, in the comments section. And now, let's get started. Hey everyone, and welcome to another deep dive. This time we're tackling something, well, pretty massive, really. Digital parenting.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it's everywhere these days, huh?
Doesn't it? And we're not just skimming the surface here. We have gathered a bunch of research articles on this topic.
Oh, yeah. We went deep for serious. Parents are past the generic advice. Like, you know, that just sets screen time limits stuff. They're looking for those real actionable insights from actual research.
That's great. And honestly, it's a conversation we need to be having. You know, it's fascinating. One of the articles from 2022 talked about how 71%, that's right, 71% of parents think smartphones do more harm than good for kids.
Seriously, 71%?
Yep. Kind of makes you think, doesn't it?
It really does.
But on the flip side, that same article talked about how parents also see the benefits of technology, right? The learning potential, the mere fact that it can keep a kid entertained for like an hour. I mean, yeah.
Right. It's true. It's this weird duality, isn't it? Parents aren't anti-tech completely. It's more nuanced, which I think is what makes this whole thing so tricky to navigate.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And this isn't even really a new thing when you think about it. It's just our generation's version of anxieties people have had. Well, forever. Like, think back to when radios got big. Or even what? The printing press. New technology always freaks people out.
It's true. But there's something different about this time, right? Like, it feels different. Maybe because we as parents now didn't necessarily grow up with all this tech constantly around us.
Exactly. We're kind of making the rules up as we go along, which is daunting to say the least.
Right? Like, trying to read a map that's, you know, being redrawn while you're driving.
Yes, yeah, 1,000,000%.
So with that in mind, you know, no pressure or anything, we're diving into these articles to see if we can find some sort of guidance, right? Some strategies, some like actual things that parents can do. And there were some really interesting ones. One that kind of jumped out at me was this idea of time balancing as like an alternative to just, you know, setting strict screen time limits.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that one. That was from that 2022 article on digital parenting strategies. Really fascinating stuff. So instead of just like yanking the iPad away after an hour, which, let's be honest, never goes well.
Never.
Right. It's about trying to make those offline activities so engaging, so interesting, that screens kind of naturally take a back seat.
Okay, so instead of no more Fortnite, it's, hey, I want to build a fort in the living room.
Exactly.
I like that.
Yeah, it's a different approach.
But realistically, isn't that kind of hard to pull off for some families? I mean, depending on your resources, your time?
Oh, absolutely. And that's something that article brought it to the whole socioeconomic factor. It's a huge part of this. You know, not every family has the means for, like, tons of extracurriculars or the flexibility to be super present for every cool offline activity.
That's a really good point. Okay, so it's not a magic solution. Note it. What else did these articles say? I know one thing I see parents talking about all the time is monitoring. Like checking their kids' browsing history, friending them on social media, all that.
Oh, for sure.
But there is this article, I think it was also from 2022, that had a really interesting take on it. It said, it's not so much about whether parents monitor, but how they do it. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, there's a big difference between, hey, I'm going to check your phone every 5 minutes and let's have an open conversation about what you're seeing online.
Yeah.
Which, you know, one of those builds trust and the other one, well, not so much.
Right. One's like, I trust you, but let's figure this out together. And the other one's total surveillance state.
Exactly, which the research actually backs up, by the way. Kids whose parents are constantly looking over their shoulder online, they're more likely to hide stuff, less likely to open up.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's more about building bridges than putting up security cameras.
100%.
Okay, now I have a question about something that I guess I do pretty often. What about co-using technology, like sitting with my kid while they're watching a show, even though I'm also scrolling through my phone? Is that like a thing, or is that just me feeling like I'm present when I'm really not?
Yeah, you're so not alone in that. A lot of parents do that. But here's the thing, and this came up in a 2023 article about like toddlers and screens. Just being physically present isn't enough. They called it active mediation. That's what makes a difference.
Okay, hold on. Active mediation. I'm going to need you to unpack that one for me.
So it's like, yeah, you're on the couch with your kid, but you're actually engaging with what they're watching, asking questions, talking about the characters, the story. You're not just a warm body in the room. You're like a co-pilot on their digital journey, right? It's like instead of them just passively absorbing whatever's on the screen, you're helping them process it, make sense of it.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Active, not passive. Got it.
Exactly. And you know, thinking about it, that kind of ties into the whole digital literacy thing, doesn't it?
Oh, right. It's not just about knowing how to, like, use an iPad or whatever, but actually understanding how this stuff works.
Yeah.
And even more than that, it's about being a good digital citizen, being responsible, knowing how to stay safe. And that's where, you know, we as parents come in. We're the role models here.
So, like, we're not just teaching them to read a book. We're teaching them to read the internet.
Yes.
And there's this great article. Let me see if I can find it. Oh, here it is. A digital literacy workshop training model for child parenting in a fourth industrial era. It talks about how parents can, like, model good behavior online, have those conversations about what's appropriate to post and share. All that stuff.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading that one. It makes you realize, like, this is serious stuff. It's not just about whether our kid can beat level 5 of some game, right? It's about giving them the tools to navigate a whole world that, frankly, is changing faster than we can keep up with.
It's true. And you know, one thing that really stuck with me from these articles was how much a parent's own, like, comfort level with technology plays into all of this.
Oh, totally.
There was this 2020 study, something about digital parenting behaviors.
Yeah, I think I know which one you mean.
It talks about this thing called parental self-efficacy, which basically means like how confident a parent feels in their own digital skills.
Right. And it makes sense because, like, if you don't feel comfortable with technology yourself, how can you possibly be expected to guide your kid through it?
Exactly. Like, I can barely work my own phone sometimes. How am I supposed to teach my kid about online safety?
Which is why it's not enough to just tell parents, like, be more digitally literate. We need to give them actual support, you know, workshops, resources, places they can go to actually learn these skills.
Yes, like we wouldn't just throw someone in a classroom and say, okay, teach without any training. Parents need training wheels for this stuff too.
100%.
Okay. South, we've talked about strategies and like our own hangups as parents, but isn't there always this underlying assumption that like every family is the same and that one set of rules will work for everyone?
Oh, absolutely. And that's just not realistic at all.
Nope.
And there's this great 2022 article by Modecki et al. Regarding digital parenting and adolescence that really digs into this.
It basically says, like, hey, we need to stop pretending every family looks the same and actually start doing research into diverse family contexts.
Because a single parent in a city is going to have different challenges than, like, a two-parent household in a rural area, right?
Exactly. Or even, like, think about socioeconomic differences.
Mm-hmm.
That article talked about how for some low-income families, technology can be a lifeline. Oh, it can be a way to stay connected with support systems, access resources, even just keep kids safe if they live in a dangerous neighborhood. Whereas a higher-income family might be more worried about, like, too much screen time cutting into their kids, extracurriculars, right?
Exactly. So the why behind how families use technology is just as important as the how much? That's such a good point. And we can't forget about gender either. Did you know there's actually research from way back in 1999 that shows mothers are often more likely than fathers to, like, closely monitor their kids' online activity.
That's such a good point.
And we can't forget about gender either. Did you know there's actually research from way back in 1999 that shows mothers are often more likely than fathers to, like, closely monitor their kids' online activity?
Really? Well, that makes sense if you think about traditional gender roles, right? Like, moms are often expected to be more on top of, well, everything.
That's what they found. And it's a good reminder that digital parenting shouldn't fall solely on moms. Dads need to be just as involved.
Absolutely.
And you know what else is interesting? That same 1999 study also found that when it came to actually talking about online content with their kids, parents from higher socioeconomic backgrounds actually did it less often than those from lower socioeconomic backgrounds.
Wait, really? That seems kind of counterintuitive, doesn't it?
I know, you'd think it'd be the opposite, right?
Yeah.
But the researchers theorized that maybe those higher income parents felt like more confident in their kids' ability to handle themselves online. Maybe because they have greater access to things like digital literacy programs, you know.
That's a good point.
But either way, it shows that there's no one-size-fits-all here. Every kid needs guidance regardless of, you know, their background, their family's income.
It's about meeting kids where they're at, right? Okay, so to recap, we've talked about specific strategies, the importance of parental attitudes, and how things like socioeconomic status and gender play a role. But before we move on, I kind of want to shift gears a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
Because, like, up until now, we've mostly been focused on the risks, right? How to keep our kids safe online. How to prevent them from making bad choices. But as parents, how do we move beyond just protection to actually empowering our kids in the digital world?
That is such a good question, and it's where this idea of digital cultural capital comes in.
Okay, digital cultural capital. I want you to break that one down for me.
There's basically the knowledge, the skills, the behaviors that allow you to not just survive in the digital world, but to thrive.
So not just being safe, but actually, like, using technology to your advantage?
Exactly. To connect with others, to express yourself, to learn, to grow. And that requires a pretty big mindset shift for a lot of us parents. Like, we have to go from seeing technology as this scary thing to seeing it as a tool for empowerment.
Which is easier said than done, honestly. So how do we actually do that? How do we help our kids build that? What was it again? Digital cultural capital?
Yes. And it honestly might be simpler than we think. It starts with, like, really paying attention to our kids. You know, noticing what they're naturally drawn to. Like, if your kid is obsessed with making little stop-motion videos on your phone, don't just set a timer and shut it down after 20 minutes. Maybe instead get them a kid-friendly video editing app.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, merge that curiosity.
Give them the tools and then kind of get out of their way and let them explore.
So let's stop doing that and more of let's see what you can create exactly.
And look, that might mean we have to get a little uncomfortable ourselves, right? Maybe we need to learn some new tech skills alongside our kids or admit that we don't have all the answers. But, like, that's okay.
We're all figuring this out together.
Yeah.
And speaking of figuring things out, remember all those mistakes we talked about earlier? Those are actually prime opportunities for learning.
You mean like when our kid accidentally posts something they shouldn't or ends up on some random website?
Yes, because it's easy to freak out in those moments, right?
I know, for sure. My first instinct is always to, like, grab their device and go, "What do you think you're doing?" Right?
Yes. But what if instead of yelling or immediately taking their tech away, we use those moments as teaching opportunities, like sit down with them, talk about what happened, why it might not have been the best choice, and how they can avoid similar situations in the future.
So instead of being the internet, police were more like their guide.
Exactly.
Because at the end of the day, we want our kids to be able to navigate the online world independently, right?
Right.
And that takes practice. And yeah, sometimes it even takes making a few mistakes along the way.
I love that.
Okay, so if we had to, like, sum up everything we've talked about today, it seems like digital parenting isn't just about saying yes or no to technology, right?
It's so much bigger than that.
It's about teaching our kids how to be responsible, how to be safe, how to use this stuff for good. It's about understanding that what works for one family might not work for another. And it's about remembering that we as parents don't have to have all the answers.
Yeah, we're all just figuring it out as we go.
Exactly.
But before we wrap up completely, I kind of want to zoom out a little bit, you know, because we've been talking a lot about individual families and like what parents can do at home. But what about the bigger picture? What about creating a digital world that's actually designed with kids and families in mind?
Oh, that's such a good point.
Like, what if we put as much effort into shaping the digital landscape as we do into teaching our kids how to navigate it?
Right? What if, like, access to digital literacy programs was considered a right, not a privilege?
Yes.
Or what if tech companies were held to a higher standard when it comes to protecting children's data and privacy?
Oh, 100%. Those are conversations we definitely need to be having, not just as parents, but as a society, because our kids deserve a digital world that is just as thoughtful and supportive as the offline world.
Right, 100%. And on that note, I think it's time for us to sign off.
Oh yeah, but before we do, we want to say a huge thank you to our amazing parents who suggested this topic.
Yes, thank you.
We hope this deep dive has given you some things to think about, some new ideas to try, and maybe even just some reassurance that you're not alone in this crazy journey of digital parenting.
And remember, we're always here to dive into more research with you at any time.
So until next time.
Happy navigating.